Blog Talk Radio.
Family, we thank you so much for joining us once again to the Us Lifting Us Thursday night, weekly Thursday night call. And we have a very good topic tonight, as we usually do. And the topic is capitalism is killing us. Capitalism is killing us. And we will begin that conversation just as soon as the music, our roots begin in Africa, finishes. Family, once again, we welcome you to the Us Lifting Us Thursday night call. We're here every Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And as the music, the title of the music, Our Roots Begin in Africa, Our Cultural Sanity Begin in Africa, The World's First Economic Systems Begin in Africa. And we're here to have a sober discussion of the economic and political plight of black people and the global cooperative economic model that provides the exact method of gaining economic and political self-determination. And the topic tonight is capitalism is killing us. And we're going to have a very good conversation about that. And we certainly ask you to participate, take notes, and join us with your questions and comments. I'm Brother Thurman. I'm an Us Lifting Us member. And also on the line is we've got one of our highly distinguished elder founders, small group of founders that founded Us Lifting Us, Brother Ankti. Brother Ankti, how you feeling tonight? And speak to the people.
Greetings, Brother Thurman. I'm feeling outstanding. Always good to be with the Ulu family, and I'm excited to be sharing this conversation with you tonight. One of our role models by example, you do us proud, Brother Thurman, and I'm always glad to have an opportunity to share and be in your company. So I think we have a good topic for this evening, some ideas that we want to share, and want to have a dialogue with the family tonight who are listening in, and get their feedback and their comments as well. So good to share with you, Brother Thurman.
Thank you so much, brother. And thank you, family, by telephone and by internet that's joining us around the world. And when give us 10 or 15 minutes to get the conversation started. The topic is Capitalism is Killing Us. And you can dial in anyone that's on listening by internet, by telephone, and call in at 929-477-2789, 929-477-2789. And when you've got questions or comments, press 1, the number 1 on your keypad to speak or to get in the queue to be speaking if someone else is ahead of you. And also, you can also listen in on this conversation by going to usliftingus.com. That's www.usliftingus.com. And look for the tab that says Ulu Radio and click on that. And when it opens up, you look for the next tab when it changes pages that says Listen Live, and you'd be able to listen live by internet radio. And also, the conversations, the weekly conversations, are also archived on Blog Talk. And you just go, you can type in the capital, the topic as well, or, and the date to find the this tonight's program will be on, be uploaded. I'm not sure if it's going to be in 24 hours, but somewhere around that in the next day or two. And make sure you take notes, because this is a very vital conversation, because we've got to have all of the working pieces in place, not just one piece, but, and this capitalism is a major piece, and Brother Unki will definitely give us a lot of information and be prepared to come back with future updates or additions to this conversation, with this hour conversation tonight. And Brother Unki, we if you want to start with that recent shooting and how that's all connected with the topic, Capitalism is Killing Us.
Certainly, Brother Thurman, and I was thinking about that after the news came out over the weekend, and I thought to myself, our community once again has been attacked by a racist shooter in Buffalo, New York, who claimed the lives of 10 people and wounded 3 others at the Tops grocery store in the black neighborhood in Buffalo. We are still grieving, and new information is coming out daily. Yet it is important that we begin connecting the dots ourselves and not allow the talking heads and pundits to tell us what this all means. This was a racist, white nationalist, violent attack. What is hidden and not so obvious is that this is an expression of capitalism. Some political leaders will beat the drum for a ban on assault rifles or to launch anti-racist programs. But programs like these will not stop the production of psychopaths, nor will they transform this sociopathic civilization. Until we shift from private ownership of the means of production to group ownership of the means of production, the current murder and mayhem against black and brown people will only continue and get even worse. Racism, white supremacy, is a set of ideas. To become operational, though, that is to say, to become concrete, to materialize, they require a mechanism. And that mechanism is the economic system of capitalism, which superseded chattel slavery following the Civil War in this country. Our esteemed elder, who is now in the ancestral realm, Dr. Frances Cress Welsing, in her seminal writings, gave us this definition of racism, white supremacy. She said that racism, white supremacy is a global system of domination and control whereby people who classify themselves as white dominate and control people they classify as non-white for the purpose of genetic survival. This system that enables people who classify themselves as white to dominate the global population has its expression in the media, in church, in education, in labor, in war, every aspect of human activity. All of them come together, coalesce around and in the system of capitalism. The reason we can't tackle global warming, for example, in the U.S., is because it requires us to get off of fossil fuel. But capitalism is based on the fossil fuel industry. For the country to move to renewable energy means the collapse of the oil industry, hence the collapse of capitalism and the collapse of global white power. So we are being distracted by a whole range of events taking place in the news, whether it's the Supreme Court on the verge of overturning Roe v. Wade, whether it's the situation developing the war in Ukraine, whether it's the shooter in Buffalo. All of these are distractions so that we don't talk about the root underlying problem, which is this moribund, decaying, dying capitalism and the need we as a global family have to move off of this system into a holistic and life-affirming system of cooperative economics. So, all economic systems reflect and express a specific set of values, attitudes, and behaviors. The economic system is the embodiment of the people's philosophy and worldview and the driver of their behavior. So I want to see if we can establish, Brother Thurman, the priority, if you will, of the economic system in any civilization. It is the economic system that is the reflector of the people's philosophy of life, how they understand the world and their place in it. And all societies, it is through their economic model that their values, their attitudes, and their behaviors are expressed. Now, it's important that we understand that the values are the bedrock of how the people see themselves. But the values give rise to attitudes. In other words, that is how people feel or are predisposed to any particular topic. So you have a value that gives rise to a set of attitudes, which are basically emotional responses to things, which in turn guides your behavior. So those three things have to be understood together, the values, the attitudes, the behaviors. So if we ask ourselves the question, what are America's values? Don't look at its founding documents like the Bill of Rights or the Constitution. Rather, simply observe its behavior, because that will tell us all we need to know. At the founding of this white settler colony project, they stole the land of the people who lived here originally and then exterminated those people, reducing the native population from 20 million to a little over 500,000 in a span of 20 years or so. They then sailed across the seas, conquered and enslaved Africans on the continent of Africa, and drug anywhere from 20 million to 100 million black Africans off of the African continent into the Western Hemisphere, whether we're talking Brazil or the Caribbean or North America or Canada. Anywhere from 20 million to 100 million souls were taken out of Africa and dispersed into the Western Hemisphere. Now, those events, the extermination of a population, the kidnap of another population, and all of these are in the millions, give us an inkling as to what are the values and the attitudes that drive these people. So the real American values boil down to this. First of all, materialism. And I say that, but I want people to grasp the fact that in Western European systems, what is most important, what is considered the fundamental aspect of life is material. In other words, if I can't touch it, see it, smell it, feel it, taste it, it's not real. So, you know, we have that expression, you know, I'm from Missouri, you got to show me. But what that translates to in terms of how a people live, it means that they don't understand anything that is invisible or immaterial. For example, many years ago when I was in seminary, professor and writer Dr. John Mbidi said, in all of his travels throughout the African continent, everywhere he looked and saw African people, one thing was certain. These were a people who were disposed to spirit. In other words, the form may have taken different shapes and shades and colors, but all of them consistently had a religious understanding about the origin of life. In other words, they held some very meaningful God concept, some notion that ultimate reality was spirit and not matter. That's critical, because if you don't have that notion that spirit is ultimate reality, then it boils down to what you can touch, see, and feel, and you miss the genius of our ancient Kemetic forebears, who very clearly in laying out their metaphysics helped us to understand that the physical is always preceded by the metaphysical. In other words, anytime you see something physical, you know that something invisible, immaterial came before it, and the fact that it exists is proven by whatever material object you're looking at. So a people who based themselves only on a materialistic outlook are bereft of a spiritual concept. And that, folks, that makes them extremely dangerous. If not spiritually immature, it's just a dangerous people who cannot have a sophisticated and genuine God concept. America gives lip service to God, but in America, the real God is the almighty dollar. And when it's not the almighty dollar, it's the almighty bullet. Those two things go hand in hand. That's their notion of God. Another important value to understand about America is that there's this bent towards violence and domination and exploitation of everything. Everything from nature to people to objects. There's this bent towards domination. It's almost impossible to cooperate with the environment. The environment in their concept has to be dominated. Women have to be dominated. Children have to be dominated. Other groups of people have to be dominated. And invariably that means violence. Then there's this notion of individualism. And in this country it's hyper-individualism. It's all about me, myself, and I. Get all you can all you get, and then sit on the can. It's a manic. Some people would call it solipsistic. It's just this distorted understanding of reality that everything in their conceptual order is breaks back to the individual. We saw that. I don't know how you guys felt about it in the Richmond area where you are, Brother Thurman, or some of the other places where ULU members are. But I remember when the COVID pandemic first got underway, and most of the health officials were saying, we don't have a vaccine, we don't even understand fully how this is being transmitted. The best course of action is to wear a mask and to limit mobility until we can get a handle on it. Those right-wing people immediately took the position, nobody tells me what to do. I have my rights, and if I don't want to wear a mask, I don't have to wear a mask, yada, 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 yada. But what they were really saying is that my individualism takes precedence over everybody else's well-being. And that's a distorted understanding of community. Africans have it right, Ubuntu. I am because we are, and because we are, therefore I am. So there's this understanding that without the community, I am nobody. I only know who I am because of the way I get reflected back to myself through my community. So if the community is not healthy and whole and well, it's just a matter of a few seconds before I'm not whole and healthy and well. And so this idea of this rugged individualism, this my way or the highway, is part of the psychosis that is the underbelly of life in these European spaces. And then, of course, there's the value of competition. We got to compete about everything. And, you know, there are places and times where competition has its place. But if we look at the universe as a whole, what we really see is cooperation. And so to have this distorted outlook that sees competition or trying to bring about competition in so many aspects of our living is just demented. And then, of course, you know, there's the hedonism, this lust for pleasure at all costs, in all ways, at all times. And that becomes problematic as well. So those are the values that are really the linchpin of American social life. And if we fool ourselves into thinking, well, there's democracy and there's concern for others, and you know, those are just words. The bottom line behavior is the materialism, the violence, the exploitation, the oppression, the individualism, the competition, all of that, the militarism, and the glorification of that are the real values that drive this country. And those are the values that are pushing life on this planet to the brink. And so, in other words, Brother Thurman, I think when we begin to view it in that light, it is difficult to coexist with the people who are oriented in this way. If you have an inability to have a healthy God concept, if the only way that you can be in relationship with other people is you have to dominate them, if it's all about the individual and there's no place for others to live their lives productively and meaningfully, if everything boils down to competition and survival of the fittest, then what we have is a society that's going to produce the kind of 18-year-old that can pick up a AR-15 rifle and mow down 10 people who he does not even know based on some bizarre concocted theory of replacement theory, which in itself is a lie. And so let me just swing back very quickly to what Francis Welsing was saying, and then we'll pause and see if there are questions and open up for a little more conversation. So this guy, Peyton Gundren, in this manifesto that he left, says that he was motivated to attack black folks because these have the possibility of replacing white folks, that America is moving towards the place where white folks will, as a group, will no longer be the majority, and other groups, black and brown and Asian, will surpass them numerically and exercise power, and these white folks will no longer be able to dominate the country in terms of its governance. And so I remember when that rally was held in Virginia, that white rally where the 19-year-old woman was mowed down by the car, and the whites were marching with their tiki torches and, you know, chanting, "Jews will not replace us, Jews will not replace us." And I think to myself, what in the world are they talking about? They have conjured up this idea that they're going to be replaced. The point that Dr. Welsing made 50 years ago was that white supremacy is the weakness of white supremacy is that it is an effort to protect them genetically. Now, you notice when they talk about replacement theory, they don't say anything about the fact that white is a genetic recessive trait, that is the lack of melanin that causes the skin to appear white. That lack of melanin, as we know, not only causes the skin to appear white and for the blue eyes and the blonde hair, those kind of characteristics, but melanin is throughout the body. It aids in the thinking process, in the muscle activity, in coordination, in so many functions. All of that is enhanced by a rich supply of melanin. So to be melanin deficient is a very serious problem. And Europeans got the shock of their lives when they began to sail out from Europe and started to touch other parts of the world. And they, you know, they had sexual relations with women in other parts of the world. Much to their horror and shock, the offspring of those relationships were not white. They turned out colored or mixed. And so they very quickly came to understand that all of their rhetoric about being a superior and a dominant people, they found themselves in situations where anytime there were sexual relationships, that the children would not be white. So that meant that in order for them to preserve themselves, genetically speaking, they had to control not only their own behavior, but the behavior of everybody else on the planet. Now, when you are one-tenth of the planet's population, that's a very real problem because nine-tenths of the planet's population are melanated people. And so at the core of their fear is the fact that they are melanin deficient and they cannot interact with other people without them losing themselves or losing their whiteness. This is not about somebody has some kind of conspiracy to replace them. They are genetically recessive, and therefore nature herself is organized against them. And so they are fighting against nature, it's a losing battle. But in the course of waging this non-winnable fight, millions and millions of people of color are dying, whether we're talking about the 6 to 8 million people that are dying in the Congo, so that Europeans can maintain control of the natural resources in the Congo, the million of people that perished in the COVID pandemic. Europeans don't have a problem when millions of people of color perish anywhere because that just means that they bought themselves a little more time. And so the dilemma that we're up against is so many things, so many events are taking place. It looks like it's race relations. It looks like it's Roe v. Wade. It looks like the gay community. But at the root of all of these clashes is a struggle for them to maintain capitalism, because that's their mechanism that gives them control thus far over the planet's population. So let me just pause there and see if we have any questions, or you may have a comment for me, Brother Sermon.
Oh, I thank you, and I'm sure all of the family would thank you. That's just a very, very good information that you brought forth, clarity that you brought forth about the European. And we thank you so much. We do have a caller that's on the line when you're ready to take this caller.
Question, I'm ready.
Comment. Yes, brother. Caller with the last four numbers, 0673. Please give us your name and tell us where you're calling from and with your question or comment.
This is Brother Kevlar. I'm calling from Gabriel Prosser City, some call Richmond, Virginia. I want to make a comment in response to the brother said that the shooter in Buffalo, he talked about the fear that whites will no longer be the majority rule. The problem with that is that the white majority hasn't been ruling. It's the white minority that's been ruling. I'm going to quote a statement that Lenin said, and I'm going to expound on it. And if you don't understand, Lenin of Russia, he was the head of Soviet Russia and then head of Soviet Union. And before that, it was a monarchy where this family was running everything. All right, Lenin believed that a representative democracy of capitalist countries gave the illusion of democracy. Let me put that now, gave the illusion of democracy while maintaining the dictatorship of the bourgeoisie. He described the United States, right? He referred to the spectacular and meaningless duels between two bourgeois parties, both who were led by the astute multimillionaires. Now, let me extrapolate, right? The founders of this country, right, were the minority. That was kind of what that person said in Buffalo, right, fear of white majority no longer ruling. The white majority never ruled. It was the minority elite that's ruling. Now, how they did it, when the so-called founding fathers of this country established this nation, the elite were the minority. And the minority can always be overthrown by the majority. We the people. So they had to give the majority an illusion of power by letting them participate in the democratic process, or participate in the voting process. If you understand, they didn't allow those who didn't have property to vote. See? So the problem with democracy, for democracy, everybody's going to be talking at the same time. See, they want a representative form of democracy. There's nothing wrong with that. But the part is that the pool that you draw from to pick somebody to represent you was never somebody like Thurman, was never somebody like the brother on the caller, right? It was the pool you drew from was always from the pool of the minority elite. That's the pool you draw from. Every year we vote for a president, and in our subconscious mind, we realize that every year we vote for somebody who makes $10, $15 million, right? We've been doing it over and over again. I don't care whether it's President Obama, George Bush, Ronald Reagan, so on. In our subconscious mind, we see this, but we never grasp why. Because the minority who's run this country gave the majority an illusion of power by letting them vote. But the pool that they vote from was never from amongst themselves, the people in their community. It always from the pool that they give them. And so what Lenin said, and I repeat what Lenin said again, and I'll get off the phone so you can understand what he said into context of what I just hit earlier. He said, Lenin believed that a representative democracy of capitalist countries, this country right here, gave the illusion of democracy while maintaining the dictatorship of the bourgeoisie. he's grabbed the United States. He referred to this as a spectacular and meaningless duel between two bourgeois parties, Republican and Democrat, both who were led by astute millionaires. These millionaires are not the majority that the shooter in Buffalo talked about. The majority of whites were never ruling. It always was the minority, the elite, who was ruling. And people have a hard time grasping that, how maybe 300 people can rule the doggone world. But that's what has happened. And I pass it back on to the caller for anything he wants to say in comment to what I just said. But I appreciate what the brother had to say, and Thurman had to say, and I agree totally.
Thank you, brother.
I appreciate the brother. You know, Brother Thurman, it's encouraging when we get a call like that, because the brother's doing some deep reading, and he's absolutely right. And that's why, for example, when they set the government up, they did two things. In addition to the House of Representatives, which is supposedly a representative body made up of representatives from the population, they also created the Senate, which is each state gets two representatives, and they certainly were from the millionaire class. So, and their work was to keep a check on the House of Representatives, because to the brother's point, the ruling class was not only suspicious of the masses of the people, they just downright didn't like them. I mean, they looked down on their noses on them, thought they were poor and ignorant and were not fit for self-rule. And he's absolutely right. They were trying to create a situation that would give the illusion of democracy, where the real power never left the hands of the millionaire landowners. So you had the creation of the Senate. You also had the creation of the Electoral College. Both of these institutions were put in place to make sure that the masses of people didn't get to exercise full democracy. And if anyone can attest to how the fact that both the Democratic and the Republican Party serve the ruling elites and not the masses of the people, we're living through a time where that is very obvious. The Democrats are so, we are the base of their party, but they're not passing legislation to benefit us. Let's be very clear about that. They are doing everything they can to cajole us, to distract us, to do anything but to build a strong movement of poor and black and brown and working people in this country. Because to the brother's point, if they did that, it would overthrow their power. So I thank you for sharing that comment, brother. It certainly deepens our conversation, and it just, I think we think back to the Occupy movement that quieted as kept. It was Obama who shut that down. But it called into question the 99% versus the 1% and made the very point that the brother was making, that there is no representative democracy for the masses of the people. Both parties are controlled by the millionaire class, and they are operated on their behalf. But that is capitalism. And so as our challenge is how do we create our own mechanism that enables us to create a different lifestyle for ourselves and our children? Because of the very point that he's making, it's obvious that at best the current system can only do minor reform around the edges. It can't do systemic revolutionary change, and that's what we need in order not to experience the full brunt of global warming, or to see white nationalism unleash itself where, I mean, they've been spoiling for a quote-unquote race war for the last 45, 50 years, and even that will not succeed. But our challenge is how do we, caught up in the midst of this system, find a way forward that enables us to give ourselves and our children a real present and a real future. And so that brings me to my next point, Brother Thurman, which is to say the surefire solution that we need is to build the family-centered, African-centered, black, group-owned economic cooperative, not only the cooperative businesses, but also a cooperative economy. In other words, ULU is in the process of building a cooperative ecosystem that is global for African descended people on the planet. We begin by pooling our resources, pooling our dollars, so that we can start opening our own businesses. I think it was MSNBC, in looking at Buffalo and the grocery store where the shooter attacked those people, the Tops, I think it's called, pointed out that it was the only grocery store, full-size grocery store, serving an area, because prior to that store, it was a food desert. In other words, there wasn't adequate fresh produce and food to serve that area, and so Tops was filling a void that had been created when the other national chain grocery stores had shut down and pulled out. And some of us, perhaps on the call, have lived in cities where the major grocery chain has shut down a store and pulled out and left a vacant hole in those neighborhoods. So I'm looking at that top store and listening to all that they're saying. What if that store was run as a cooperative? In other words, rather than a privately owned business entity, what if that grocery store was collectively owned by the people who live in that area? That would change the dynamic and the power relationships dramatically. And the question that we are grappling with in ULU, that we're wrestling with, that we are attempting to get a handle on every Thursday night when we come on the air, is we're trying to help our people to understand that is no matter where you live, just look at the economic landscape around your neighborhood. What are the businesses? How well do they serve the needs of our community? For the most part, they are extractive. In other words, we spend our money, but those profits get taken to other communities. They don't recirculate fully in those neighborhoods where we reside. So we are building an entire ecosystem around our neighborhoods, not the grocery store, the drug store, the dry cleaners, the florist, the restaurants, all of the automobile shops, the Walmarts, the Targets, all of those businesses. In other words, whatever need that we as a people might have living in any particular space, there should be a cooperative within a 3 to 5 mile radius where we can go to and get that service or that product, and to do it through a cooperatively owned enterprise. When we have that kind of a network set up and our money circulates and recirculates and changes hands over and over and over, creating opportunities for employment for ourselves and our children, generating a surplus that we then can use to fund African-centered schools and African-centered health clinics and African-centered senior citizen complexes once we have created that space, that bubble that we can protect, then we are no longer on the American capitalist plantation as most of us are right now. That's, we are trying to project vision of what that looks like. The exciting thing to me, Brother Thurman, and as more and more of us catch hold of the vision, is that this is something that is completely within our agency to do. We don't have to wait on Congress. We don't have to push them to put some legislation up only to be shot down by two millionaires who are working on their own program. It doesn't have to run through the Supreme Court. It doesn't have to be okayed by the White House. All we have to do is pool our money and build our own business institutions. And we have done that over and over and over in the past. Collective, cooperative, economic businesses are not new things for us. We've done these. What we have not done is link them together into an entire economic ecosystem where all of our needs are supplied, where we don't have to go to any of these extractive corporations that are parasites on us, but instead we can go to our own businesses and purchase, procure whatever it is that we need. Short of doing this, we will continue to be at the mercy of these white nationalists who now have lost their minds completely and are now have morphed into white nationalists and fascists, or at least they were always that, but now they've taken off the sheets and, you know, we see the fangs and you know, we hear the we know what's coming. And to, you know, Brother Cabellon's point, the tragic thing is the ones who are doing these acts of violence, those aren't the millionaires. The only thing that they have going for them is they can turn around and look down their nose and call somebody the N-word, and that makes them feel better about themselves. We don't have time for that. We have to do the work of building our own cooperative businesses, and I'll say this and then I'll pause for comments and questions. The only way that the businesses that we operate will function looking like Ma'at, that is truth and justice and righteousness, order, balance, harmony, and reciprocity, the only way we can get that kind of ethos in our communities, our businesses have to operate on the principles of Ma'at and the Nguza Saba. And therefore, black capitalism will not work for us. Now, that's okay for, you know, some people on the side who want to do that. But the core economic activity in our neighborhoods has to be through these cooperative mechanisms that we're building that are based on Ma'at and Nguza Saba. That's the difference that will revolutionize and put us on a totally different trajectory going into the future. And it is completely within our hands to do this. No one else, we can do this on our own resources, on our own dime, so to speak. So let me pause there and hear comments or questions, Brother Thurman.
Yes, sir, Brother Unkin. We thank you so much. It's just extremely powerful, scholarly information that you and the callers are bringing forth. We do have a caller with the last four numbers are 3440. 3440, please give us your name and tell us where you're calling from with your comment or question.
Greetings, Brother Thurman and Brother Unkti. This is Brother Shabaka calling from sunny South Florida, but it's not sunny right now and it's dark. But I really enjoyed the conversation and particularly Brother Cabellon, I believe that's his name, pointing out the fact that really these people, there's been a minority of folks, and these people are extremely wealthy. But let me add to that a little bit, because on the if we look at the global scene, just like you have in America, the controllers of the productive forces, means of production, are, you know, what we classified as capitalists, and they were white. And I guess we could discuss if there's any black capitalists. I don't think we control any means of production. So we that's a discussion for another time, but it's definitely we know who from what persuasion do control that. We might have some very rich black folks, but I don't think they control means of production. But if we look at the global, and I'm adding on to what has been said, you have folks in the northern hemisphere, particularly Europe, Western Europe, you know, Canada, Australia, what have you, are controlling the productive forces in the countries that is occupied by people that look like us, even though they may not necessarily be physically there, but through their instruments, international instruments, they control, and I call them international capitalism. One such person, Klaus Schwab, who is the CEO of the World Economic Forum, which is an organization composed of about maybe a thousand or two of the top corporations in the world, made a statement once. He said, by 2030, you'll own nothing and be happy. Now, let me repeat that. He made that statement. You can go on there, internet it, Klaus Schwab. You own nothing and be happy. The implication is that you know, all of resources, assets, you know, is going to be owned by somebody else. You won't even have a house if you look at the implication. That's how I looked at it. Now you might say, well, you know, what kind of mentality to, you know, bring this about? And why would I be happy? If I don't own anything, that means I'm going to be dependent on people who do own. And that's going to be a very small number. So I bring that up to be able to reinforce the urgency and the necessity to begin to build a structure contrary to that. Urgency, well, let me also quote, not quote, but at least paraphrase one of his chief advisor, who is a dude out of Israel named Yuval Noah Harari. Okay, you can look him up too on the internet, and he made the statement that the technology exists now that they can digitize and hack every human being on the face of the earth. Okay, now it's almost 8 billion of us now. That's interesting. And I listened to a lecture today in which people were talking about the centralization of currency. In other words, the fiat system, which is the dollars, the yen, and all that other kind of stuff, is going to be replaced by a digital currency. All right, and apparently that digital currency is going to be controlled by the central bankers, who some of which, most of which, are part of this World Economic Forum. So, you know, capitalism as we once know it has grown in order to sustain itself, because it sees itself dying, and one of the main ways in which it tries to sustain itself is the control of currency, putting it into a digital form, having it centralized such that you own nothing and be happy. Brother, I'd just like to leave you with that good conversation. Francis Cress Welsen has given us a lot. Neely Fuller has given us a lot in pointing us in the direction. But we need to keep the fire going, because the European, the capitalists, are not trying to die out. They're trying to stay around. Peace and thanks a lot, and continue to struggle.
Shane, thank you, brother.
Thank you, brother. Shabaka, always, always provocative input. My first thought is that you will own nothing and be happy. When we talk about African-centered, family-centered cooperatives, we are talking about collective ownership. In other words, if we think back to when human families and communities first came together in groups to provide for their material needs, the food, the clothing, the shelter, they didn't own the land. When they had to make tools, the tools were communal tools. So this, even the idea of ownership has to be rethought, I think, in terms of what that looks like through an African lens. So that in that context, Brother Shabaka, it is possible where you and I individually may not own anything, but because all of the things that are necessary to preserve life and to live fully and productively are available to us, because they are owned by the collective, by the whole group. I think what the brother, what Schwab was probably, what he was talking about was, as individuals, you won't own a thing. And if you are happy, it's going to be because they told you you were happy, whether you're happy or not. Just part of the brainwashing that goes along when the elites and the billionaire class are structuring reality for the masses of people. So I think our part of our response has got to be, we are bringing about a new civilization where the ownership of things is a group experience. For example, many of us have taken Ubers to get here and there, or Lyft or some car service, and we've been told, you know, that I guess it's the current generation of 20s and 30-year-olds have moved to a place where they really see owning a car as a burden. You know, you got to pay insurance, you got to put it in the garage, you have to be responsible for the upkeep and the maintenance. It's a whole lot easier when you get ready to go somewhere just to call Uber, a car pulls up, and away you go. So that even in the present moment, the notions of ownership are changing very rapidly and very dramatically. But to your other point, Brother Shabaka, in terms of they mean us no good, that's obvious. And so for that reason, we still are in a challenge and a struggle, I think, for African people to reclaim control over the means of production, and then to produce what is needed in a way that is equitable and fair and renewable without exploiting any group of people, without exploiting the environment and poisoning the community in our wake of progress. So we know that they do not intend to allow people to live independent of their control. And that, I think, is the essence of the struggle that we're facing. We are trying to build a civilization where we are not trying to control the thinking and the behaving of every person. We are trying to put at our hands and our to give each person the means to share fully their gifts, their abilities, their genius, and to be partakers of that. And in turn, we share our gifts and our genius and our abilities, and it's that symbiotic, mutual give and take that then creates an ecosystem where all of us can thrive and prosper. That is not the European vision. We know this. They only are trying to create a situation where our labor and whatever it is they can extract from us are available to them to enhance the way they live, and they'll give us whatever we need to be either numbed out or drugged out, but able to get up and turn a screw or whatever it is they need us to do. So our challenge is to free ourselves, free the land, and create something very different and far better, and at the same time to hold them at bay. And I think with the help of the ancestors, we're moving in that direction. I think we're just about past time, aren't we, Brother Simon?
Yes, it's that time, and we certainly need to continue this conversation tonight or in the very near future.
But I want to thank Brother Shabaka for that question. That's a powerful question.
Yes, it is.
And
yes.
Thank you, Brother.
And family,
I really enjoyed this sharing with you tonight. Always a pleasure to talk
good.
To you.
Absolutely, Brother, and I thoroughly enjoyed being on the call with you and the powerful information that you've given out. And family members by telephone and listening to internet radio around the world, this conversation about capitalism is killing us, and we got into solutions, the good, the surefire solutions, and why is the cooperative economics the only solution. And this conversation needs to be continued. And I want to urge the family members that are listening in on this conversation. If I didn't say it a minute ago, it's going to be in the archives of Blog Talk in the next day or two that you can re-listen and take more notes, because we need to have these kind of thoughts, this kind of information going around in our head all the time, not every now and then, and then turn our attention away from it. And I would urge family members to reach out to Us Lifting Us at info@usliftingus.com. And if you feel that we should continue this conversation centered around the capitalism and cooperative economics model that we must embrace and to counter the capitalism and the effects of capitalism, please just cast your desire that Brother Unki will come back with part two and continue this conversation, because there's more, and we need to be talking about the kind of powerful, vital information that Brother Unki and the callers brought forth tonight, and the ones that are listening in that also have content to bring, they're just taking notes. And we need to continue the conversation. And Brother Unki, I'm most certainly as a Us Lifting Us member, and we all have one vote, I cast my vote that you will come back with part two and part three and part four, because it's vital what you bring, whatever the subject is, but this subject about countering the capitalistic system. And I'm down for you coming back, brother. If you do that, and the people, as I said, you can just contact Us Lifting Us at info@usliftingus.com. info@usliftingus.com, and also give your thoughts and your feelings about the value of this conversation tonight also. Brother Unki, give us
yes, sir, brother.
Anything
just
else that you
want to say
to,
again. Again, thank you. Thank Brother Kabelon. Thank Brother Shabaka. Thank all those who are on the call listening tonight. The expression we used to use was "Pamoja Tutashinda." Together we will win. So let's keep fighting, keep struggling, keep loving each other, and remember the counsel that Brother Thurman provides for us every week. It's about the spiritual path that causes us to transform into higher beings, and it's those higher beings that's going to create the life that we want. So. We know we have to rise above where we are right now. So thank you, Brother Thurman, and look forward to our next time sharing.
And, brother, when you come back at some point real soon, come back with that conversation about the higher being. That's another essential that's being overlooked, unaware of, and please bring that conversation to us.
Certainly will.
All right, family. This has just been absolutely so informative, bringing clarity and uplifting. And thank all of the family members that's with us tonight. And we'll be back here next Thursday with another very essential conversation.